I'm Marty Moscowane. Welcome to Radio Times. Yesterday afternoon, two bombs exploded within seconds of each other near the finish line of the Boston Marathon. It was a shocking and bloody scene at what has been a celebratory event. Yesterday was also Patriots Day in Massachusetts. As of this morning, three people were killed yesterday and more than 150 were injured, some having lost legs and feet. President Obama said that while we still don't know who did this or why, make no mistake, we will get to the bottom of this. Today on Radio Times, what we know about what happened yesterday in Boston, where the investigation goes from here, and how the country mourns. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Any thoughts that you might have, even messages for the victims and their families and friends, do give us a call. We begin our conversation with Kevin Cullen. He's a columnist for the Boston Globe's Metro section, was a member of the 2003 investigative team that won a Pulitzer Prize for their coverage of the Catholic Church's sexual abuse scandal in Boston. And Kevin Cullen, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me, Mary.
And I know you're driving somewhere. Where are you in Boston today as we speak?
I actually pulled over. I'm in Boston, but I just pulled over, so I won't kill anybody, including myself. I haven't slept. I've been up all night.
You haven't slept since yesterday, well, I guess for more than 24 hours? Your piece today, and I have to say, it was a very moving piece in the Boston Globe. The headline, A Perfect Marathon Day, Then the Unimaginable. And as you described the day yesterday in Boston, it reminded me of September 11th in New York and what a gorgeous day that was.
Yeah, I was struck by that, too. I think I made some remark about that, that, you know, we didn't lose our innocence yesterday here in Boston. We lost it back on that September day, which was also a perfect day. Yesterday was it was about as good as it gets around here, because, you know, Patriots Day is a holiday here in Boston, so people have it off, the kids are off, and Bostonians take it very seriously that they line the route and cheer the runners on, and it's probably the city's signature event. I mean, obviously Boston's an international city. It's probably, you know, at any given dime it has an awful lot of people from different countries in it, but no day has more diversity in the city of Boston than Marathon Day, because there's so many people from abroad who come over just to run the race. They love to, if you talk to runners, they love Boston because, you know, like Philly, it's just a place full of tradition. And the Boston route is one of the harder routes because there are hills. It's not like London or Dublin or even New York. It's kind of flat. So the runners take it as a challenge. We take it as great civic pride to go out there. And it's also a very cool thing. I didn't do it yesterday, but I've done it with my sons before. There's the early Red Sox game. Mm. And they time it so that the crowd will then leave Fenway Park and get down to the you have to walk about less than a mile from the Fenway Park to where the route, the end of the race is. And so you have like 35,000 people converge down there to cheer the runners on the last, you know, half a mile. And that's exactly what happened yesterday. Mike Napoli hit a walk-off double that scored Dustin Pedroia, and the Red Sox won in dramatic fashion over the Tampa Bay Rays. And everybody left the ballpark just in such a great mood. And I mean, even if the Red Sox lose, it's such a great day, the early baseball game and then the marathon. And that's how cynical this person or persons who did this are. They knew that at this hour, that's when the stragglers sort of coming in. The elite runners have long passed, gone by, and this would be the people who were running in about 4 hours, and that's like the average marathoner. So it was incredibly crowded down at the finishing line, and obviously whoever did this was very conscious of this and knew when and where they put the bombs was to inflict maximum death and destruction.
This has been said over and over in the last almost 24 hours, but I don't think we can say it enough. Not only did we see first responders running to help people, we saw people on the sidewalk, we saw volunteers, we saw runners. To be honest with you, it was pretty inspiring to see the kind of public response to this tragic event.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I have friends from Ladder 7 who were there, and they ran. I mean, when the first bomb went off, they didn't think. They just ran toward to the victims. And when the second bomb went off, they didn't even flinch. And one of the firefighters I talked night I had a beer with him. He was just trying to chill out. He told me that there were civilians with him. They were, like, helping. And, you know, sometimes in a scene like that, a firefighter or a paramedic or a police officer will tell a civilian, you know, thank you, but no thank you. You're not trained. But everybody just helped yesterday. I think that if you're looking for a larger lesson here, Marty, whoever put those bombs there is about as cynical and as nihilistic as you can get. And the evidence that they will not prevail was what we saw with our own eyes, and that was the first responders, both law enforcement, fire, EMTs, and just ordinary people who ran together toward the bomb. So, we have a saying in Boston, we'll take two punches to land one. That was nothing yesterday, what was done. Beyond the horrible tragedy for the families involved, whoever picked the fight with Boston picked on the wrong town, I'm telling you.
And that's Kevin Cullum. He's a columnist for the Boston Globe, telling us about what happened yesterday in Boston, and joining us from his cell phone, which is why it's not the clearest sound, but we wanted to make sure that we had his voice on Radio Times today. And again, we want to hear from you. Questions or comments, reactions, thoughts, feelings, give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Kevin, part of your story in the Globe is about this little boy. An 8-year-old boy from Dorchester who was killed yesterday, and his dad was in the marathon.
Yeah, the boy's name is Martin Richard, and his dad's name is Bill. And Bill was pretty well, Bill is pretty well known around the neighborhood of Ashmont, which is a section of Dorchester, the biggest neighborhood in Boston. And Bill and his wife, she's a Seven Hill girl, another part of Dorchester, and they're kind of like homesteaders. They moved into this neighborhood at Ashmont, which is a pretty rough neighborhood 10 years ago, but they're bringing it back. And Martin, his son, I talked to people who actually saw this, that when Bill crossed the finish line, he came over to the barrier. There were like these metal barriers that kept the people on the sidewalk separated from those in the race. And Martin gave his dad a big hug. He was obviously very proud that his dad had finished the marathon. And then Bill went on, you have to, you know, register your time, give you a number and all that stuff. And then Martin went back with his mother and his sister, and the bomb detonated. Yes. And Martin was killed. His mother was very seriously injured, and his sister had part of her leg blown off. I mean, I know the firefighter who carried her to the ambulance, and he was very, very upset.
Well, it's very upsetting to read that, and certainly to know the extent of the injuries. And I have to say, Kevin, it sounds like reporters that have joined us from battlefields, the numbers of lost limbs, the numbers of, it looks like injuries kind of below the waist, the legs and feet.
Yeah, it was the blast went kind of, I talked to one of the paramedics there last night. He had been there in the daytime. I talked to him last night. He said that it literally just kind of like went like below the knee, and it blew limbs off, blew feet off. The force of the blast was apparently just very low to the ground, and that's where the most serious injuries were. And you know, I talked to the firefighters I was talking with last night, said that of the 140 odd injured people, 30 of them were what we call code reds. Mm. That's a code red is when the ambulance or the fighters that would transport people, they would call ahead to the hospitals, and when they say a code red, the hospital knows that that person is coming with life threatening injuries and that they need to be prioritized. So of the, you know, that gives you an indication of the damage done by these bombs. If 30 of those people had life threatening injuries when they were transported yesterday after the bombings.
Well, and I guess if there is any silver lining to this, is that there was a lot of security there. There were cameras there. There were witnesses there. There were medics and certainly hospitals close by to respond what sounded like very quickly to what happened yesterday afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, Boston is blessed with quite a medical community. I mean, I saw there were, I mean, the medical tent was there too, and that was usually that's for people who are dehydrated or have cramps or blisters. And up in It's like a MASH unit. And, you know, there were doctors and nurses who had run in the race and then ran to the tent and volunteered their services. Like I said, as horrible as this is, it was just truly inspiring and awe-inducing to watch the reaction. Like I said, the firefighters ran towards the bomb. The doctors and nurses and medical people who ran in the race ran to the medical tent. And it's just quite a testament to those, the character of the people. And it actually stands in such stark contrast to the cynicism of the people or person who left those bombs.
I know there was a press conference this morning. Governor Patrick spoke to the mayor of Boston as well. And we also have learned that the FBI is basically taking charge of this investigation. Where do things stand here? Do you even know?
Well, to be honest, I haven't talked with... I've been more concerned about a firefighter friend of mine. That's what I've been doing this morning, is trying to deal with him and help him. But I know that the last time I talked to somebody's very senior law enforcement, they told me they were, you know, pursuing two prongs. One is whether it was foreign inspired and carried out by a foreign national, or whether it was domestic terrorism and the act of an extremist who would hate the government. Because circumstantially, you know, the timing of the attack leads some investigators to think it might be domestic, because it happened on a day that extremist groups, anti-government groups in America hold sacred. Whether that's the tax day itself, Patriots Day, or, you know, it was 20 years ago that the Branch Davidian compound was raided by the FBI, resulting in some 80 deaths of sect members. And then 2 years later, on the same day, the Timothy McVeigh blew up the courthouse in Oklahoma City. Right. So that leads some credence to the theory that it might be anti-government, extremist, domestic, homegrown terrorism. But obviously, anytime something like this happens, the first two words in anybody's lips is Al-Qaeda. And they're trying to figure out, there's a Saudi national who was actually being questioned by the FBI last night. And then early this morning, a friend of mine in law enforcement told me they raided his house. Hmm. He is actually... been cooperative, I was told, that he apparently was detained or tackled by somebody who saw him running from the blast site and sort of concluded that maybe he was involved. His story to the authorities is that he was just a spectator. And we have a very sizable Saudi university population in Boston. There are several thousand Saudi young people here. It's a very common place.
And
for,
Kevin,
Saudi.
Yeah,
study.
I hate to do this only just because we're out of time, and I do appreciate the fact that you joined us today in Radio Times, and thank you for your coverage as well.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome, Kevin Cullen from the Boston Globe. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Choose PA Wind supports WHYY and encourages energy consumers in Pennsylvania to power their businesses and homes with energy from in-state wind farms. More on clean, local wind power online at choosepawind.com/Philly.
Widener University Law School supports WHYY. Widener Law offers flexible class scheduling through day and evening courses. Learning is reinforced with hands-on experience through clinics, practical skills training, and more. With a campus located in Delaware, the corporate capital, Widener Law is committed to offering a unique advantage. Learn more at law.widener.edu. That's law.widener.edu. Widener University Law School.
This is Terry Gross. Join me Sunday afternoon, May 5th, at the McCarter Theater in Princeton for Off Air with Fresh Air. I'll talk about my adventures hosting Fresh Air, play clips of interviews in which things didn't exactly go as expected, and then you could give me a taste of my own medicine during the Q&A. There will be more to see than just me. We'll have animations by WHYY's digital artist-in-residence, Tony Off. For information, visit whyy.org/events.
Abington Health supports WHYY and offers minimally invasive procedures designed to help people overcome strokes and brain aneurysms. Physicians use interventional techniques through small incisions to help speed recovery. Patient stories at abingtonpowertoheal.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoing, talking about what the nation and probably parts of the world are talking about. The two bomb explosions at the finish line of the Boston Marathon yesterday killed three people, including a little boy, and injured more than 150 people so far. We just said goodbye to Kevin Cullen, who's been covering this story for the Boston Globe. And now we welcome Philadelphia Police Commissioner Charles Ramsey. And Commissioner Ramsey, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Nice to have you with us. And to our listeners, again, give us a call. Any questions specifically about security, maybe even about Philadelphia security, give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Commissioner Ramsey, is Philadelphia's Police Department working with the Boston Police Department?
Well, I've been in touch with Commissioner Davis. Actually, prior to the explosion, we were on a conference call together with the Vice President discussing gun issues. And it wasn't 10 minutes later that the information came across that there had been an explosion at the Boston Marathon. So I reached out to Ed a little later. Obviously, he's pretty busy right now, so I sent him a text and offered any assistance that we could provide. I also reached out to Ray Kelly, the commissioner of NYPD. So, yeah, all the law enforcement officials have been in close contact with one another.
And what is the assistance that the Philadelphia Police Department can provide for Boston?
Well, we have an excellent explosives unit here in Philadelphia, as well as SWAT teams and so forth. But it doesn't appear they need that kind of assistance right now. They've got a lot of people working on this, but should they need some help, we certainly would provide it.
And has security been increased in Philadelphia and in other cities from what you know?
Yeah, there has been. Now, there are no threats to any other city that I'm aware of, including Philadelphia, but we're all on a heightened alert status right now, which means simply that we've increased our presence and visibility in areas where we have large numbers of people, like our center city here, certainly around critical infrastructure. We have a Flyers game tonight, so we'll be coordinating with Wells Fargo security around that. And, of course, we have our own Broad Street run coming up soon, and we have a run this weekend, I'm told, a shorter run. But we've got a lot of events here in Philadelphia, so we'll be working very hard to coordinate everything with other agencies as well as other law enforcement agencies. Met with the mayor yesterday, who is right on top of things, and so far I think we're in pretty good shape.
Is the Philadelphia Marathon, from what you know, is that a go, at least as it stands today?
Yeah, I certainly hope so. I don't see any reason why we would cancel the Broad Street run. I think that it's very important that not just in Philadelphia but across the country that we get back to normal as soon as we can. Part of what a terrorist wants to do is get inside your head, if you will, and change the way in which we go about things. Obviously, we have to increase security. We need people to be aware and alert and let us know if they see something unusual. Give us a call at 911. We will check it out. Don't make that decision yourself. We will check it out. So we all need to be vigilant, and we will definitely have increased presence, but it should go on as scheduled.
What we are learning also from the marathon up in Boston is that, of course, you've got witnesses there, you've got spectators. Most everybody in this country seems to have a phone on their camera. You've got witnesses. I'm assuming there are street cameras there as well. Can we assume that there is just a lot of video information up in Boston?
Probably video and still photos. I mean, people take pictures of loved ones, and certainly we're not interested in you know, the person that you took the photograph of, but what's in the background? And you never know when you snap a photograph where at that moment in time we may have a suspect there. So they're certainly going to be looking to have people turn in any photographs or anything at all that they may have taken during that period of time. Again, If you can give some indication of what time you took it, especially prior to or right at the time of the explosion, it would be helpful to law enforcement. Again, you know, let the investigators decide what's useful and what isn't useful.
And again, that's Philadelphia Police Commissioner Charles Ramsey, our second of three guests in this hour of Radio Times, Talking about the bomb attacks, the bomb explosions yesterday in Boston at the Boston Marathon, and the questions it raises about security and certainly an investigation. There is much we do not know, and we do not want to get ahead of the story, but there is still much to discuss. And if you have any questions or comments for the commissioner, do give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Commissioner Ramsey, I'm wondering what you think then the role of the media, the press, even social media, what you think their role is under these circumstances when, again, there's so much we do not know.
Well, I think as far as the mainstream media, and I've been watching a lot of coverage, and I think they've done a good job trying not to get too far out in front. Mm-hmm. Putting information out that's inaccurate. Now, it's going to happen because there's always a lot of chaos and confusion immediately after a big event. That's why there are so many press briefings that take place by the officials in charge of the particular incident to try to keep, you know, the flow of solid information out there, but at the same time not put information out there that could in any way impede an investigation. So it's kind of a balancing act. But you know, if even the media has still photos or video or anything that may be of use, hopefully they have turned that over to the FBI or the Boston police as well. So we all have a collective responsibility to try to get to the bottom of this. Now, social media turned out to be a good way of people Sure. being able to communicate and get back in touch with their families, let them know they're okay. So, you know, again, this is... all these things going on has pretty much crashed their system. I'm told that they had difficulty getting cell phone coverage during a period of time. Some was intentional, maybe, because of a fear of devices that may be in the area. You don't want anybody using a cell phone to explode them. But at the same time, when you have heavy volume, sometimes that'll go down.
Well, and I'm thinking about the difference between this kind of sporting event or even the Broad Street Run in Philadelphia. It's not like going into a stadium where you can, you know, where people funnel through an entrance or even going through Right. an airport where you have to go through security. I would assume there are specific challenges to ensuring that the public and the participants are safe.
Well, it's not a closed event. You've got 26 miles for the marathon. It's impossible to totally lock down everything. It is public, means people come and go. Even though the area had been swept a couple times, but because people can come and go, something can be introduced after the sweep. So it is challenging, and that's why we need the public to really be vigilant when you're at these kinds of events. And if you see packages hanging around or you see someone acting suspiciously, you know, let us know. Either call 911 or mm-hmm. alert the first police officer you see.
What are the lessons that have been learned since September 11th, which is almost 12 years ago?
Well, the need to have good communication between agencies. Prior to 9/11, and I was in Washington, D.C. as police chief at the right. time, there was good communication between, MPD, the Metropolitan Police there in Washington, and the federal agencies, but nothing like after 9/11. The degree of information sharing, intelligence sharing, has just grown and grown and is very, very good. I've been in touch with my SAC here in Philadelphia, for an example. He called me as late as 11 o'clock last night just to give me an update on what was going on. So that's changed dramatically since 9/11. We now have these fusion centers, which brings together federal, state, and local law enforcement, getting information from a variety of sources, analyzing that information, and pushing that information out to the people that need to have it.
Now, the FBI has taken the lead on this, and I'm assuming that
yeah.
that's standard procedure.
It is standard procedure. If there is any indication or even belief that there's possibly a nexus to terrorism, and I'm not saying there is, I don't know, and I don't know if they really know at this point in time, then the FBI would be the lead law enforcement agency, and everyone else would pretty much play a support role. The ATF, obviously, because they have explosives experts. The Boston Police, obviously, would be another. I'm told that they have the National Guard involved, as well as, I'm sure, city agencies and so forth. But the lead law enforcement agency would be the FBI. Now, if there's no nexus to terrorism at all, something that an Aurora, Colorado-type situation, the local law enforcement is usually the lead.
And just a couple of more minutes before we have to say goodbye to you. I mean, no one, at least at this point at 10:31 Tuesday morning, no one has taken responsibility. What's the significance of that, do you think? Or is there?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I can't really read into that. I mean, I don't know what that means. It could mean that it's that this is something domestic, lone wolf type of situation. Who knows? I mean, you can't figure folks like this out. It's just amazing that people can be this violent, this vicious. But one thing, rest assured, whoever is responsible, they will be brought to justice. I have no doubt about that.
I was talking with Kevin Cullen from the Boston Globe about what people have remarked over the last almost 24 hours, which is just the response of the police on the ground there, of first responders, of firefighters, of runners, of people who are sitting on the sidewalk. It's really to counter what horribleness happened in Boston. It is pretty inspiring to see how people respond.
Well, it is, and you never know how you'll respond in a crisis until you're actually in one. But it is good to see the way people come together. I'm told that there were people who were helping one another, you know, text to try to, you know, catch up with loved ones. There was first aid being administered right there on the scene. It wasn't just police and fire and other workers running toward the explosion, but there were others that ran toward it as well to try to render some assistance. It was absolutely incredible. And, you know, in the midst of tragedy, there's pride there when you see how people respond in a situation like that.
Any final words before we say goodbye?
Well, I would just hope that people continue to do whatever they had planned to do. Obviously, we live in an age where you have to always be vigilant. That's just the world that we're in right now. But let's not let this change our way of life, because that's exactly what they want, and that is something we cannot afford to give up. That's what makes America America, and we definitely need to do all we can to stop terrorism, but at the same time not let it stop our way of life.
Well, Commissioner Ramsey, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome. That's Philadelphia Police Commissioner Charles Ramsey. And again, we started our conversation this hour with Kevin Cullen, a columnist from the Boston Globe's Metro section, has been covering the bombing, the two attacks in Boston yesterday. And that is what we are talking about today on Radio Times. And we do want to hear from you. Any thoughts, any questions? We don't want to get ahead of this story because it's important to talk about what we just know. But obviously, it's a very disturbing, upsetting thing that happened in Boston, and we know there are a lot of runners down here in Philadelphia. You might know someone who was a part of the Boston Marathon or maybe even have run that race as well. So do give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Joining us now is Tricia Wachtendorf. She's an associate professor of sociology at the University of Delaware and the associate director of the university's Disaster Research Center. She has conducted quick response and reconnaissance fieldwork following a number of major disasters, including the World Trade Center disaster of 2001, the Indian Ocean tsunami of 2004, Hurricane Katrina in 2005, the 2010 Haiti earthquake. And we did speak to her last fall when Sandy blew into the Delaware Valley. And Tricia Wachtendorf, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty.
So what are your thoughts as we learn more about what happened yesterday in Boston?
Well, first of all, I want to say, just like everybody else, that our sympathies go out to those who were both directly and indirectly affected by this event. It's in some ways very shocking to see the images that are coming back, but in other ways, it's very inspiring to see, as I think some of your other callers have mentioned, the very wonderful work of people who were on the ground helping each other, assisting each other. Both in terms of the formal responders who happened to be there as part of the event, as well as the many bystanders and citizens that were helping each other in those initial hours.
Do you think that tells us, I mean, certainly the Boston Marathon, a famous and historic marathon, that there's some sort of connection, sense of community between the runners and perhaps the spectators and those of people that live in Boston?
I certainly think that there's a connection that we've seen nationwide, as even in terms of social media, people showing their support if they're part of the running community. But at the same time, I think that this is something that is good to remind us of that activity that takes place after most events. So you mentioned some of the events that we've studied here at the Disaster Research Center. We see the same type of activity. So not only is it the formal first responders who are helping, but contrary to this myth of mass panic and people sort of running around in a frenzy, we do see people who have a range of skills. They might know first aid. They might just be a citizen who's holding someone's hand and comforting them in a very stressful time, who's offering their cell phone or giving someone a bottle of water and adding some comfort. This is the type of activity that we see after these types of events, and it's important to remember how much of a role common citizens play in that aftermath.
Well, I'm also thinking that at the Boston Marathon, and again, this has been said time and time again, is that there were medics at the various sites, obviously, because we're talking about a 26-mile event. Hospitals nearby that were able to respond. So I guess if there is a positive side, it was that the city was ready to deal with this.
Absolutely, and you always want to hesitate to say fortunately in these circumstances, but the placement of where the bombs went off was near the finish line. This, of course, is an area where there are medical personnel who are ready to provide assistance to runners who might need assistance or people in the crowd who might need help in that time. Ample security that were in place, and we saw volunteers and responders running and providing assistance. It's also something that would have been part of the training for the event itself. Now, this is an assumption on my part, but whenever you'd have a very large event like this, you would have volunteers and trained personnel who are meeting to talk about what would need to be done in particular circumstances. Now, when you're going through that training, you don't really think that a bomb is going to go off near the finish line and have such devastating effects. But it would be fresh in people's minds. They would have met each other. They would have had these conversations, particularly at a more formal organizational level, but also with some of these volunteers who are helping, some basic training. So it'll be interesting to see how much they were able to draw on those discussions that happened before the event took place and actually put those into action when something happened.
We're almost up in a break here, but I'm just thinking about all the images that are coming from Boston. I don't know whether that gives people a certain sense of hope or whether it's upsetting and depressing and frustrating, perhaps even all of that.
Sure, and again, the images that we're seeing are quite graphic, so it's our sympathies really go out to it, but it also helps us understand how these responses take place. And one of the things that I think will be interesting in terms of the investigation is the amount of people who are actually having their cameras running at the time. You had press coverage there who were filming, who actually got the explosions on tape at the time. You had people taking pictures just with their cell phone cameras and video. It'll be interesting to see how that both helps with the criminal investigation, but also trying to make improvements for these responders in the future. What went well? What could have been done a little bit differently to smooth the response and to use that opportunity for improving emergency management practice?
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation with Tricia Wachtendorf, Associate Professor of Sociology at the University of Delaware, where she is the Associate Director of the University's Disaster Research Center. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Mann Center supports WHYY. Tickets are available Wednesday, April 17th for the Mann's 2013 orchestral concerts. The Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra performs a Jerry Garcia symphonic celebration featuring Warren Haynes and Disney's Pixar in concert. The Philadelphia Orchestra returns with Symphonic Sportstacular, a new Legend of Zelda Symphony of the Goddesses, a tribute to Van Cliburn, Michael Feinstein and Friends, and more. Tickets for these and other concerts at manncenter.org.
I'm Robin Young from Public Radio's daytime news magazine, Here and Now. We bring you the news that happens between the morning headlines and the afternoon wrap-up, plus conversations with authors and music makers, stories that affect you, maybe a story about you. So please join us for Public Radio's daily digest of news and culture, Here and Now. Today at noon on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY Opera Philadelphia, presenting Mozart's masterpiece, The Magic Flute, from April 19th through 28th at the Academy of Music. When the Queen of the Night's daughter is kidnapped by an evil sorcerer, it's up to the heroic Prince Tamino to save her. Mozart's The Magic Flute is a tale of unpredictable, death-defying adventures to ultimately triumph in wisdom and true love. Tickets and information at operafilla.org or by phone at 215-893-1018.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We're talking about the two bomb explosions at the finish line of the Boston Marathon yesterday. Killed three people so far, including a little boy, injured more than 150 people, some of them seriously. It's a shocking, bloody attack and certainly a bloody scene, as we have seen from the various images coming from Boston. While no one has claimed responsibility, President Obama vowed that whoever did it would feel the full weight of justice. The FBI has taken control of the investigation, and as we have talked about this morning, first responders, along with volunteers and runners and people on the sidelines, rush to the scene to help victims. And again, our guest is Tricia Wachtendorf, Associate Professor of Sociology at the University of Delaware, also the Associate Director of the University's Disaster Research Center. And we have called her up from time to time when we talk about disasters on Radio Times. And we want to hear from you, your thoughts and perhaps even your emotions at this time. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Why? Tricia, before we start taking some callers, though, I'm thinking of all the little kids that were probably, you know, watching their mom or their dad or their brother or sister, aunt or uncle, you know, neighbor crossing the finish line up in Boston.
Sure, sure. And all the other family members as well. I saw images of people with strollers and people very concerned for their family members. You know, it's a difficult time, not only for those who were there at the site, of course we understand that, but for these conversations to take place in the community of Boston. Children will be asking questions, even having the same conversation with my daughter as we drove to school today, in case she heard anything in the classroom. You know, this is something that we face all sorts of risks in our community, and that could be whether or not we have a family member who's killed in a car crash or injured. It could be a sickness in our family, and it could be a very tragic event like this that receives a lot of media attention. These are unfortunately opportunities for discussion that we have with our children, that we talk about the event depending on their age, and talk about it in a way that's age appropriate, and listen to them in those circumstances. And I think for those family members who had young children there, and even for adults, it will be a time over the next couple of weeks to make sense of what actually happened, to be speaking with others who were there, to be speaking with family members, and really try to understand and regain that sense of security in a way that's been shaken.
What did your daughter want to know?
She was more interested in the fact that it was dress-up day at school.
Oh, really? So she's
and you
she's
follow like, that lead, is, honestly. You do. And so a six-year-old like her is going to be asking very different questions than a 12-year-old or a 20-year-old or ourselves, for that matter. Mm-hmm. So it's trying to make sense of this in a larger context. It's easy to be glued to the news. It's easy to be glued to the television set. But to really use it as an opportunity, and I think this inevitably happens, to think about public space, to think about the risks that we encounter, how we want it to affect our lives, and how we want to also preserve that sense of public gatherings, the wonderful atmosphere that comes with an event like the Boston Marathon or other events. We don't want to lose that. And so it's thinking about how to improve our safety, improve our response, while at the same time understanding that there's other things to value as well and to consider those in context.
Well, let me get some callers in on the conversation. Again, that phone number, 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. While there is much we don't know about who was behind the attack in Boston, there is still much to discuss, and that's what we're doing today on Radio Times. Let me see what Amy from Elkins Park has to say. Amy, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
We've heard amazing things about what all the first responders have been doing. I was wondering, my husband actually did his medical residency in Boston several years ago, and I'm wondering what's going on at the hospitals, how badly taxed the staff is there, and if there's anything we can do to help them out.
That's a good question. Tricia, based on your experience dealing with previous crises and disasters, what do you think?
Sure, and I think a lot of it is listening to the direction of public officials, whether or not there's a call to give blood or whether or not they have enough blood on hand right now. It's something to listen for. I think that as we have additional press conferences, you will hear from those who are there firsthand regarding what they need and perhaps what they don't need at this particular time. Skilled professionals in that case are certainly more useful than those who might be well-meaning. But I think there's lots of ways that we could come together and really look for direction from public officials on what the needs are, but also support each other in the community and just talk with each other in our neighborhoods and, again, try to make sense of what happened in a meaningful way.
Amy, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And again, you can call 1-888-477-9499. Tricia, we began our conversation talking with Kevin Cullen, a columnist for the Boston Globe, and he said he was on his way to meet with a firefighter who had been on the scene, and it sounds like his firefighter friend was upset by what he had seen. And I sometimes think we forget about the kinds of emotional, psychological stresses on those very well-trained first responders, but nonetheless, when they have to deal with this kind of carnage.
Absolutely. And we saw that after 9/11, when many people who were uniformed personnel lost people who were close to them or saw very devastating things in the days and weeks that followed. We heard the same thing after the shooting in Newtown, the effect that it had on responders there. So this is a circumstance that we really have to remember, that these first responders are people too. And there should be support services. There likely are within the institutions themselves. But also understanding that just because someone is wearing a uniform that day, that they're not going through the same thing all of us are going through and trying to make sense, ask those questions why, even if there's not a reasonable answer that follows.
So support services is someone to listen, someone to talk to. I mean, that's important
It comes in very different ways. So it might be a formal individual within the agency, and I imagine within the fire department, firefighters are going to experience difficult situations routinely. So there likely is someone within that agency to provide support. But also, sometimes we saw after 9/11, Red Cross workers or volunteers who would just sit down and have a cup of coffee with the responders. And it's not necessarily that you're interrogating them for their feelings and their emotions, but just needing someone to talk to and to listen. Really, to what they have to say, it can be very helpful and very therapeutic in those circumstances.
I asked the police commissioner in Philadelphia, Charles Ramsey, this question, but the same one to you, Tricia, which is, what do you think then the lessons learned have been from or since September 11th?
Well, I overheard his emphasis on communication. I think that's absolutely important. The extent that we have routine drills and routine meetings between these organizations during the year really help when a crisis happens or a disaster happens. There's a couple of different things in this event compared to 9/11. Certainly the role of social media, both in terms of people trying to find out what happened, being able to put messages out there very quickly, even before a press conference takes place, or perhaps even before it's on the news, ways to communicate with each other, both in terms of finding people, finding loved ones who might be missing, as well as sharing information and defining the event. So that simply wasn't the case when 9/11 happened. And that plays a role in today's emergency response. Unlike also some other events that are more routine, you might remember the with the See Something, Say Something campaign in New York, and there was that case where a van was parked in Times Square, I believe it was, and it was a street vendor that noticed, you know, this isn't normal. This is something unusual. There's a car there. I think it was running at the time. They were able to notify the police officer. And it was that everyday individual who saw something out of place that was able to report it. The challenge in these types of events is that everything is not normal. It's a major event. There's people there who are not normally there. There are fences up. There are equipment up that are not normally there. I imagine you'd have a lot of runners who might be leaving a bag behind or tossing an extra shirt as they started off early in the morning and things warmed up. The unusual is more difficult to spot. And so that's, again, one of the challenges in these non-routine events, to be able to see something and say something and feel comfortable that, you know, this looks out of the ordinary. I don't know what the ordinary is, but I'm going to say something to an official nearby.
Let me get back to our callers at 1-888-477-9499. Looks like we have Todd from Glen Olden joining us today on Radio Times. Todd, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I do a fair amount of disaster management, disaster response activities, and one of the things that, and she's already touched on a little bit, was we call it critical incident stress management after disaster, and that's typically done for the responders.
Mm.
The kind of touchier, fuzzier point that I'd make is the how to manage, like, doing stress debriefs with the victims, the families, and people like that, especially when they come from such a scattered, diverse population. And the marathon crowd, they didn't come necessarily just from Boston. They came from all around. But how to track people who are definitely transient when they go home and making sure that they get the proper kind of critical incidents to the system stuff to help them out. And one group of people that was there that gets overlooked right now by the press, it seems like, is the Newtown parents who were in the crowd and witnessed the bomb blast directly. And one of the things we typically stress on basically debriefing people is, like, focusing on your family and focusing on your positive aspects in your life. And these people are definitely behind the eight ball already. And then to witness this. And anyway, I appreciate the comment. I appreciate the call, Todd.
No, thanks so much for calling in to Radio Times. And Tricia, I'd just be curious about your response, and I should just underscore what Todd said, because Kevin Cullen wrote about it in the Boston Globe, is that near the finish line at the Boston Marathon were some members from, or some people who live in Newtown, Connecticut, just to kind of underscore the tragedy here. But he's also talking, Tricia, about the fact that this is an international event and people come to it and then they go home.
Yeah, your caller makes an excellent point. Sometimes, you know, we have these events that are in an isolated area, either geographically, a community impacted by Hurricane Sandy, for example, and there's the opportunity to come together as a community or different segments of the community, or it might happen within an organization or an institution. So even with the shooting in Connecticut, the focus on the school, the focus on the families with associations with the school, the focus on the broader community. Here, it's such a mix of a large number of people and a mix of people who may be going back to areas, and they won't necessarily have the opportunity to connect with others who've experienced the same thing. The idea that you don't understand, you didn't see that, you weren't there. The challenge to really make sure that those support groups are systems, not necessarily groups, but systems are available in the community as people begin to process it. It might take a few days. It might take a few weeks for that to really make itself apparent. Right now, people are in shock. They've experienced something. They're trying to get out of the city. They're trying to make travel arrangements. It's when they get back home that they'll really start to absorb what happened to them and try to make sense of it, and to reach out to those in the area if they're having challenges or difficulties doing so.
Todd, thanks so much for the phone call. Let's see what Mary from Kimberton has to say. Mary, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, hi.
Hi there.
I'm signed up to run both the Broad Street and the Philly Half Marathon in September, and I'm running with a charitable organization, and I just wanted to reaffirm what the police commissioner said, that we can't let terrorists, you know, shut down such incredible, wonderful stuff, because marathons are so much more than just a run event. There's an awful lot of behind the scenes that a lot of people don't realize, in terms of raising huge amounts of money to help worthy causes and wonderful coming together of community, as you said, from even around the world. It's amazing stuff, and it's such a tragedy to see somebody strike something like that.
Well, Mary, I appreciate the phone call to Radio Times. Good luck in those races as well. Tricia, you know, are you using the word terrorism to describe what we know what, about what happened in Boston, although we don't know everything?
I've seen the same headlines as everyone else on the newspaper. My sense is it's best to focus on what happened as opposed to what we don't know.
Right.
Whether or not we define someone who sets off these bombs as a terrorist or a lone actor, you know, is more relevant in terms of the criminal investigation and trying to find out the other people who may or may not be involved. I think for my purposes, you know, I'm more interested in seeing what happened and the impact on the people and the way that we were able to respond effectively or things that might need to be improved upon. Certainly there's a sense of fear and uncertainty that's been generated, whether one calls it terrorism or not, and that's something that we'll need to negotiate. Mm-hmm. But I think your caller is right, that these events still... I have every confidence that the next race will probably be even bigger as people come together in the running community, as they want to show support, as they want to demonstrate the fact that they're committed to this and committed to being in public environments and taking ownership of that space. My husband is a runner, and I feel, you know, he's going to be running as well. My children are starting to run races. It's not like I have any sense of undue or overwhelming worry in those circumstances. We need to always be thinking about what's going on in our environment, but we also need to feel confident that we come together as a community, that we are there to help each other when things go wrong and to celebrate when things go right.
Well, Tricia Wachtendorf, as always, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you very much, Marty.
You're very welcome. Associate Professor of Sociology at the University of Delaware, also the Associate Director of the University's Disaster Research Center, also spoke with Philadelphia Police Commissioner Charles Ramsey. And we began our conversation with Kevin Cullen, a columnist for the Boston Globe. Do stay with WHYY and NPR for more coverage of the attacks in Boston yesterday at the Boston Marathon. You can also go to WHYY.org/Radio Times and find out more about this program. I'm Marty Moscone. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour. Stay with us. We'll be right back.